everybody. Jerry Pippin, and we are at Angel Fire at the resort, and we're broadcasting for the second annual 2010 Paranormal Symposium and Film Festival. Had a lot of fun last night. Went up to Eagle's Nest and had a little get-together up there. Met a few people. Last time we didn't get a chance to get up there. That's the highest point around here. I think it's about 10,000 feet. We're at 8,500 feet. And the weather is wonderful in September and October before the real snow starts falling. You might consider coming here early and enjoy yourself. It's a nice, pleasant getaway. Boy, have we had fun. And I tell you, Naomi Horry was with us last year, and we had a nice little chat. And I didn't ask you about one of the things you do. By the way, Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Jerry.
And I wanted to ask you about the psychic surgeon. What do you mean by that?
Well, psychic surgery, I also call it soul surgery. It's not a medical surgery, but what you do is you work on the etheric body, and some people do it differently. For example, John of God and some of the psychic surgeons in the Philippines, they actually will take a knife and then stick their hands in people and pull tumors out. And, of course, that's illegal in this country.
And you don't do that?
No, I don't do that. Otherwise, I don't think I would want to do that. Yeah, but I work with psychic surgeons that work on a higher vibration so you can do the same work without having to go physically in the body.
Now, what kind of psychic surgery, what do you use? Arm aches, shoulder aches, or something like that, or what? What do you do? I mean, what? Who needs it?
Well, people can use it for all different things: physical ailments, as well as spiritual, financial, emotional things like that. And it's interesting because the first time I did psychic surgery years ago, I had always wanted to learn. And one night I woke up in the middle of the night, and my hands were just buzzing. And so I grabbed my cat and I started working on him, and it looked like his fur was kind of pulling in and out as I was pulling stuff out of him. It was wild.
And was your cat better?
My cat was, he was kind of, he liked it at first, and then it got too intense for him, and then he ran away. So I said, okay, that's enough.
So if someone contacts you on your website, do you do this in person, or can you do it otherwise?
I can do it remotely, although usually I do other types of healings remotely, and then psychic surgery, for some reason, people like to come in person and do that, but it can be done remotely as well.
And once again, who would need this? I mean, it would be like, could you do something with with the carpal syndrome or whatever?
Yeah, certain things respond better to psychic surgery. One example, for one woman came in who had a pain in her heart for 4 decades, she said, and so I worked on her, and then my hand just went into her, and then she just lifted up off the table horizontally and said, "What the hell was that?"
She
like
literally
she
lifted
back
up,
down.
Huh?
Yeah, it was, and then she said, "Wow, like the pain had gone away instantly." And another time I worked on a woman who had a fatty lymphoma on her arm. Uh-huh. And then I worked on it, and I told her to keep grounding it out, and then she did. And then that night all this weird like yellowish white stuff actually came out, and her doctor was amazed because he said those almost never go away without actual physical surgery. So
how did you figure out you could do this? Just when you tried it on the cat, you figured that this will work?
Well, I'd always wanted to learn, and I had learned sort of basic elements of it, but it really went up to a whole nother level that night that I woke up with that, and then I've kind of been learning ever since then. It's been changing and evolving over time.
And what else do you do?
I also do matchmaking. I do.
We talked a little bit about matchmaking last year.
Yeah, I not only hook up couples, but I also like hook up families, nannies, babysitters, employers, employees.
In other words, if someone needed a babysitter, you could help them get somebody that would be what, compatible with the family. Is that what works out?
Yeah, and someone who would be good with the kids, and also actually a lot of CEOs and people in very high positions in corporate America. America also used me to figure out who to hire. So, yeah.
I wanted to find out about that because you mentioned that a little bit last year. Yeah. So CEO of a company would come to you and say, I need a marketing specialist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what would you do? You'd look over the resumes or you'd contact the people? Or how does that work?
More often than not, they have a pool of applicants that they feel is strong and ask me to look at the energy of each one. And I pick one or two from there, and then we look at the astrological information if it's available. And also, people also ask me for potential investors. Is this a good potential business partner? Is this a good potential investor? So I'll look at the energy, say, yes, this looks like a good match, or no, this looks like a bad match, and this is why. So.
And are you expensive?
Some people might say so, but I think I'm very good and worth every penny.
And you've been doing this for a while.
Yes, yes, yeah.
It seemed to me when I was talking to you earlier, you had either gone back to school or something, or maybe not. Maybe I got it. Live in Colorado,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I used to teach at the University
okay,
of Colorado.
Okay, I knew there was something there.
I used to teach ways of knowing, including intuitive ways, experiential ways, not so much on the academic ways because that's what they learn the rest of their college education. So perhaps that's what you're thinking of, and I also teach my own classes. So
you actually had a college course or something in this?
Yes, I taught ways of knowing. I used to teach journalism and research and writing and things like that, but then I was only teaching ways of knowing. But actually, now I only teach my own classes and do sessions and just focus on those things. So.
Ah, a journalist.
Yeah.
Well, you need some intuition to be a good journalist,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I think the best people in every field often are very intuitive, even if they might not think of themselves that way.
Now, how did you, I guess back in high school or maybe even younger, you got interested in and knew you had these abilities?
Yes. Different things would happen. Like, for example, I had broken up with this guy, moved to Japan, and then I had this dream, but I knew it wasn't a regular dream, that his father had died and the two birds I had given him died. And then months later, I got this letter that had followed me all over Japan to my old addresses and finally had reached me, saying that his father had died, and when he was gone for the funeral, the two birds had died as well. So things like that, but I never could control when I knew things or didn't until I learned certain tools, which I teach now.
Did you live in Japan at that time?
Yes, I had moved to Japan at the time, but my old boyfriend that had written to me was still in Colorado.
Yeah, okay, and that's one of the reasons you ended up there, I bet.
Well, actually, it's funny. The reason I ended up in Japan was my mother hated my boyfriend at the time, so she said, hey, there's this great program in Japan where you can learn about your culture, get to know your relatives, and so I'm like, yeah, that sounds great. And as soon as I hit Narita, as soon as my feet touched the ground in the Japanese airport, I realized I'd been had, and that my mother had tricked me because she was afraid I would marry my boyfriend. So I get through customs, I say to my aunt, I just realized my mother tricked me into coming here because she was afraid I was going to marry my boyfriend. And she said, oh yeah, she mentioned that to me. So it's funny, I just was a little slow on the uptake and didn't realize till I actually was in Japan, miles away from him. And fortunately, I didn't marry him, which was a good thing.
So, in hindsight, it's okay.
Yes, yes.
How are you with relationships now? Are you married? Or?
No. I broke up with someone that I had been with for 16 years a couple years ago.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, when we talk about what you people hear come to your booth, what do you do for them here? I mean, what do you have things to show them or what?
Yeah, mostly I do psychic readings, looking at the energy of their auras, and then I'm also teaching a free workshop tomorrow morning, Saturday morning at 10 o'clock, and then I also do healings. And for some people, they enjoy having some sort of physical thing to look at, so I also do soul cards where they can pick a card and then we read the energy of that based on their questions.
Are these regular playing cards, a regular deck that you're talking about?
No, actually, they're called soul cards, and they each have a unique design on them. And I really like them better than tarot cards because it's easier to get to the energy of the card and what it means. Because I think sometimes with tarot cards, people can get in their heads, oh, Eight of Wands means this, and they get sort of analytical about it, and it's harder to see the actual energy. So I really like the soul cards that have only the pictures.
Now, Shanina Johnson, one of our producers, she went to one of your sessions last year.
So I'm trying
to figure out what you do exactly for people around the world that want to contact you. I know you do remote things.
Yeah. People all around the world, it's interesting. I do either healings or readings for them, and sometimes I go in other countries and teach as well. But it's mostly healings and readings, and it's so universal no matter what country, what culture you're from, what age. Often it's about love, finances, career, health. Those are the main topics. But sometimes people will have very specific things. It's interesting, in Angel Fire, there's a certain niche of people that are very specialized, who are very very transmedium, very in touch with this psychic world already. So they have kind of very specialized questions related to that.
So here at Angel Fire, you're talking about people coming to the conference or people that live here or what?
Yeah, people coming to the conference who
come
to me for
sessions.
Because
I always hear about there's some sort of a mystic experience around here.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel something?
The energy is very intense here, and I feel like a lot of people that are drawn to the conference are in touch and in tune with those energies. So, yeah.
Yeah. So when you come to this place, you get a feeling of intensity. Would that be the way to describe it, or serenity, or what?
Well, I think it has both a certain peace and a very spiritual energy to it, as well as a lot of transmedium energies. And I think that's often the case with areas that have a lot of powerful energy going on. You have both the light and then the other floating around. It's both.
Okay, now, as an exact title for you, Naomi Hori, what would we put after that on a sign?
Intuitive healer. And my favorite thing to do is soul surgery, so maybe soul surgeon. Yeah.
And when you talk about, and we started the interview talking about that, You heal things physically, more than just the soul.
Yes, yes. And a lot of things, too. The spiritual is always tied to the physical, because if there's a physical illness or imbalance, there's always some kind of spiritual component to that.
So if you treat someone that has something that's chronic, perhaps you might be able to clear it up.
Yes, yeah.
And how's your record on that? Pretty good?
Pretty good, yeah. I feel like I'm my best example, because I actually recovered from stage 3 leiomyosarcoma, and I had a 7% survival rate for that, because my first surgery had transected the tumor, spreading the cancer cells throughout my body, and everyone thought I'd be dead, but I'm just fine. I had my 5-year anniversary on September 1st, and I'm totally healthy.
Congratulations.
Cancer-free, and I feel like working through all that energy on myself has really done a great deal for me. So that's why I love to teach people.
You know, when one finds out that they have something that could be terminal, it must be a huge, it'd have to be a shock, but how did you deal with it?
Well, it was a great opportunity for me, actually, because...
In other words, you didn't really want to accept it and didn't.
I just decided it wasn't time for me to go. And actually, it's been a great gift for me, because it's helped me, I believe, in many ways, become a better healer, looking at all these different energies. And it also kind of pushed me, because before I was in literary publishing and in the academic and corporate world, and I had been ready to go for some time, but this kind of pushed me, like, are you going to do what you came here to do or not? So it made me really focus on that, and it also made me go in and really look at some of the energies that I hadn't wanted to look at and really flush them out and shift them.
How about your belief in the afterlife? What happens here? Do you have any feelings about that?
I believe that we're all spirit and we change bodies. We dispose of bodies. We're done with bodies and then we get new bodies. And it's interesting because my mother had passed away years ago. But in many ways, I actually got to know her much better after she passed away through spirit communication.
You felt her presence?
What? She comes to visit me, and sometimes when I do different classes or attend different classes, she'll be floating around studying as well. So, and she loves it and wishes she had the opportunity to do that when she had her body. But next time she has her body, she's going to bring that information that she's collected in between lifetimes into her new body.
We have a lot of people to talk to, so we're going to let you go here in a minute. But you have anything else you'd like to bring out that we haven't?
No, I just wanted to say thank you so much for including me, and it's an honor to be on the Jerry
Piffen
Show.
It's always fun having you on. And what has happened to you in the last year besides, I guess you did some more psychic surgeries.
Yeah. In the last year, it's interesting because I feel like with the shifts inside myself and then the shifts on the planet, things have really been manifesting. Like it shifts so much, so I have a lot more sort of multi-million CEO clients, people in Hollywood, and people from all over the world getting in touch with me. So it's really exciting to be able to help people all over.
And you're pretty sure this shift is going to happen?
Oh, yeah, it is happening already, so, yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
And Naomi Horry, and we'll be back in a moment. I'm Jerry Piffen, and we're at Angel Fire Resort in northern New Mexico. If you've never been here, you need to come and visit us. I'd like to take an opportunity here to talk to you about our websites. We've been adding programs, and sometimes it's difficult to find what you're looking for. First of all, we have a search mechanism on each of our websites, and you can click, like if it's jerrypiffen.com or if iPodshows.net, just search the websites, put in the name of what you're looking for, and it will come up. Check us out, won't you? Often. In the background, you hear Norio Hayakawa, and he'll be on later on talking to us about UFOs, but he's quite the keyboard player. Nancy DeYoung is here, and Nancy is one of our favorite people. I believe we talked to you last year.
That's right.
And I don't know if I brought up your Egyptian trip last year or not.
I don't think we did talk about that.
I don't think we did, so... Why did you go to Egypt, and how is that related to you? But before we do that, even let's do a little bit of a promo about Nancy DeYoung. Tell our audience about you.
Well, I'm an etheric clearing specialist. I've written two books. One's called Modern Shamans. The other one is They Do or You Do. They Do or You Do is hot off the press. I just got it in time to bring it to the symposium.
Now, in that book, what will they find?
That book is takes a look at all of the things that influence us and play out in our lives, like psychic vampirism. There's a chapter on ETs.
Now, I'm going to have to discuss that before the show's over, psychic vampirism.
Yeah. And walk-in experience, ghosts. Those sorts of things.
Before we get to the Egyptian trip and things like that, here, what kind of exhibit do you have, or what are you doing here at the symposium?
Well, I have my books here. I'll be giving a talk tomorrow morning.
And the subject of the talk is?
It's called Inner Contact. And this, of course,
that's a theme of the whole thing, is contact.
Is contact.
Usually you think of extraterrestrial contact.
Right.
And you're talking about inner contact. What's the difference?
It's getting in touch with that inner part of ourselves so that we can get ready for contact. We all know it's coming at some point. Some people are having it now, but generally speaking,
I understand.
We're headed for it. So it's getting ready for it. I remember the first time I saw one. I was with a friend, and I was in Boulder, and one was going right along the tree line, just right down one of the main streets in town.
Was it a saucer-shaped thing?
It was a light. It was like a plasma.
Okay.
Plasma craft. And she started chasing it, and I ran the other way. So it's like that sort of thing. We have to get ourselves ready so that we're not afraid, and so that we're in our power, and so that it can be a nice experience, not the stuff that a lot of people are experiencing today.
And so you say we have control over that as individuals?
I believe we do. I believe that if we're in our power and coming from that place of healedness, I'm making up a word here.
Well, that's a good word.
That our experience, that we're not so easily taken advantage of. There are people who are having contact that it's a soul agreement, that they've agreed to do this before they ever came into this life. And some of those experiences are pleasant and some of them are not. But if we haven't made a soul agreement for this, we don't have to experience this. So I have helped people end contact, and other people who have had it and it's been their agreement, we've been able to find what caused it, why, so that they don't feel like a victim with it.
Yeah, now, when we're talking about inner contact with whom?
Our inner self, our inner power, that, becoming an empowered being.
And is this difficult to do, or you just have to, I mean, you mentioned something right at the top, some sort of, when I asked you, what you did, you said this...
Etheric clearing.
You're right. Tell us what we're talking about.
Okay. Here. Etheric clearing,
that's what I'm getting,
is based on soul retrieval and releasement. These are two old shamanic techniques of going into those inner worlds and getting back our power pieces that have been taken from us so that we can step into our power. So those are two of the main things I work with. I also am able to talk to people's guides and get information for them and go in and see so that they get a lot of information about what's happening, why it's happening, and what we can do to stop it, if anything.
How did you become a shaman?
Well, that goes to Egypt.
Okay.
You wanted to go there anyway,
yeah, right,
so here we are.
Right.
I was actually living in Colorado, in Boulder at the time, and a friend introduced me to this lady who was doing soul retrieval. And so I was going to her for a while, and in December of that year, well, actually, let me back up, in August of that year, I went to her, and she'd had a really bad day. And I said, well, maybe I should work on you, you know, just kidding her. And she said, yes, you need to do that. And she laid down on the table, and all of a sudden I started seeing all of this stuff and the relationships that she was dealing with that were causing.
Now, when you see this stuff, were we talking about visions, like you're watching a movie screen or something?
In my head.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Inner visions.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was
more
getting,
like a dream, but you can remember it.
Right. And I was getting information about what was causing it. And so we did her clearing, and she got up, and I said, you got to teach me how to do this. And she says, oh, yeah, you know how people do. Someday we'll do that. Well, in December of that year, I saw this flyer for going to Egypt for a healing conference. And I decided I needed some healing, so what better place to do it than go to Egypt? And so I gave that to myself for my birthday present. And while I was there, I just had the most profound experience. I was sick for like 24 hours before I went into the pyramid. And it wasn't anything I'd eaten or drank or whatever. It was just this whole cleansing process I was going through. And when I got up, we had a group thing where the pyramid was closed to the public. And just our group went in at 4 o'clock in the morning. And I got up, and I hadn't eaten or drank or anything for 24 hours. I was still feeling pretty sick. Anyway, I went in there, and it's like I knew I was there to finish an initiation that I'd started in another lifetime or whenever, that I had failed. And so I went down into the pit, which at that time it was still open. I don't think it is anymore. And I had this experience where nobody could see me. I mean, I'd go right up to somebody as close as we are and look them right in the eye, and they couldn't see me. It's like they...
So, okay, I've never been to Egypt. So this crypt is where one of the pharaohs is?
Well, they think that there was machinery down in the pit.
Okay.
It's down on the... the lowest level.
Okay.
That's open, or well, that they've opened.
And you went down there, and you were invisible.
It was my first experience with spontaneous invisibility, which I didn't know at the time. It scared the tar out of me. I didn't know what was...
You know how to do this now?
Well, I find myself doing it sometimes, and it's like I don't quite know how to control it, but I know when it's happening, because I've had it confirmed to me enough times that I know the feeling when I'm invisible.
Does it happen while you are talking to somebody and all of a sudden you become invisible, or when you change the locations you're invisible?
Well, let me give you another example.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Okay.
I was giving a talk on... I work with essential oils, and I was giving a talk at the fitness club on this, and I had told the massage therapist, I said, come in when you're free, you know, and just come in the back and sit down and, you know, join us. And she didn't come, and the talk ended, and saw her a couple days later, and I said, why didn't you come to the talk? And she said, well, you weren't there. I said, yes, we were.
Yeah.
And we went over the room, and, you know, and I said, we were there. And she said, no, you weren't. So the whole group had gone with me. And that was another time I had it confirmed. So
you were able to bring others along into this.
Evidently.
And do you have a clue how this happens or why?
I think it has to do with, you know, parallel universes. I don't know, you know, exactly what it is. But it's like everything looks the same, you know, when you're in that other space. I mean, if we were someplace else
You're obviously probably not interacting with them. Or are you?
With what?
With the people in the room.
Oh, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, I was giving a talk on essential oils.
In other words, we're probably talking about two different realities.
Evidently. And I think it's like when I get into that space of, it's like raising the state of consciousness. And I think that's it. It just becomes so that you're just not visible to most of the people in this third dimensional reality. And I think probably a lot of us do this, and we just don't even know we're doing it until you have something like that happen to you.
So do you have a tip on others on how they might be able to figure this out, I mean, and understand what they're doing? You have an inner... You know, I guess we need to go to your speaking event in the morning.
I think a lot of it has to do with just raising your vibration and your consciousness enough that you just go there. And, you know,
why did you go to Egypt originally? Were you just a tourist,
I wanted to go for the healing conference.
Okay.
And so anyway, I'm in this pit having this experience, not understanding it, and just weeping. I mean, I just sat there and just cried and cried. I was scared. I was, you know, I mean, it was like, and this whole past life stuff was coming up. And so then I found my way out of there eventually. And I still didn't know what was happening. And I went up to the Queen's Chamber, and I sat in one of the spaces. And it's like I knew I had been there many, many times before. So I evidently had attended classes or whatever was going on in the pyramid back when, during the days of the priests and priestesses.
You have any idea what time period we're talking about?
You know, I never looked at that.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay.
But a long time ago. Back when the pyramid was active.
Ancient mysteries, right.
And then I went up into the King's Chamber, and we had our ceremony up there, and Wallace Black Elk is the one who led it. He was a Native American elder. And they turned out all the lights in the pyramid, and I'm seeing these birds flying around. I'm hearing them flapping their wings. I'm seeing all these people were like lights, you know, sitting there in this totally dark space. And I'm going, oh, my God, you know. And what I heard at that point was, let it go. it's time now to move on. So I was able to release that old lifetime. And I think in doing that, it opened me up to the work I was doing in Egypt back in those days of, you know, we think about shamanism as being started in Russia and the Native Americans doing it and so on.
Yeah, that's the reason I was getting to that.
But this is like, it was older. We probably didn't call it shamanism then. But the work I do now was triggered by what I had done in that other lifetime as a priest.
Do you have a website?
I do. It's N, D. Young, like in my name, DEYOUNG.com. It's pretty simple.
And that's pretty easy to remember, so people can mm-hmm. find that. What will they find on this website?
Well, my books are on there. I'm not real good at web development, so I don't have a lot of stuff on there yet. But I do have a couple of articles on soul retrieval and spirit releasement that anybody can go read. I've got a link to a couple links to other sites that are good. So, and kind of a just explanation of, you know.
Well, Nancy, anything else we'd like to talk about here?
I don't know.
I think we pretty well covered it then.
I'm sure there's 100 other things we could talk about.
Okay, well, we look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Thanks,
Jerry.
Thanks
very much. We're here at Angel Fire, and we're broadcasting, and we'll be back with another interesting person. So don't go away. You know, on the Internet, you can get lost. You hear some people, some hosts saying, bookmark us or put us on your favorites. Well, that's a good idea. If you don't have one of our websites or all three of them on your favorites, we suggest you do that now and come back often. We change content every day. So come and see us at jerrypippin.com, iPodShows.net, and UFOShows2Go.com. We're at Angel Fire, and we have one of our favorite people, Dr. Rita Louise, here. Rita, how are you?
Hi, Jerry. How are you doing?
Okay. Now, you had...
Wait a minute. I'm Rita Louise from soulhealer.com.
Yeah, I got to do that, don't I? You're nice enough to let me plug my website, so I'll let you do it one more time.
That would be www.soulhealer.com.
Right. And you're all over the place on the Internet with radio shows.
Well, I've been trying, Jerry. I just have been loving doing my show, Just Energy Radio, and the guests that I've had on, yourself included. Last week we had John Greenwald on. Stan Freeman wasn't on much before that. Daryl Sims, all your good friends. And it's fun. I just love it.
And many of these people you already knew, but you're probably meeting some new people here.
Well, actually, John and I have only ever corresponded via email. I'd never spoken to him before, so that was really nice, just getting to have a voice to put with the name and actually meeting him this weekend.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I like to come to these things. You can put a face to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a nice face, as usual.
I try.
It doesn't look like you've been driving 17 hours.
It's the makeup, Jerry. Ooh, yeah. Wait.
You came up through a very scenic part of New Mexico.
It was gorgeous. I've never been this far north in New Mexico, so it was just nice. And then driving into this area is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
And you're a psychic. Do you feel anything when you get up in this area? Ambiance or something?
You mean, do I feel the vibes and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I mean...
But you were pretty tired, so maybe not. Because you drove... I mean, I guess you were tired.
Well, I mean, there are parts where you could definitely feel the energy of, like, buffalo going across fields and Native Americans kind of standing on tops of areas. And, you know, I didn't really look energetically coming into this area because I was kind of tired and didn't think about it. But,
well, you know, you go to Jefferson City, Texas, or Jefferson, Texas. And one time we did a show there and you were... actually making contact with a lot of entities.
Right. Yeah.
Anybody from another dimension watching us right now or a ghost? You feel anybody?
Well, there's Daryl. He's from another dimension.
But I think he's real. I'm not sure.
Well, he's just in body right now.
We're talking about Daryl Sims, the alien happy. He'll be on before we finish this little nonstop marathon.
Yeah, he just happened to be walking by as we were talking about aliens.
Now, we're going to do the tinfoil hat contest.
The Bitsy tinfoil hat
yeah,
contest.
Yeah, got to name your dog, but your dog didn't come.
She didn't come. She's not very good in the car. She has to look at all the scenery everywhere, from one side of the car to the other side of the car. But she's a superstar, Jerry. Did you know that?
So we got in a little trouble. You know, some people just don't take fun.
What about the whole tinfoil hat thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. And, you know, we emailed back and forth
a
little
bit. Well, I had a couple people raised that came with me this time about it.
Well, I know. And one of the things that I was thinking, you know, I had Stan Freeman on Just Energy Radio.
Now, we have a picture of him signing your tinfoil hat.
Well, I have a lot of pictures of me in the tinfoil hat with people on my website. But what was interesting was we were talking about his new book, and, you know, I referred to us. So it was myself, him, and Catherine.
Marsden,
that's right. All talking, and I was referring
I was
to us.
To figure out which Kathleen then associated with Stanton.
Yeah. But we were talking, and I said, you know, but we're all alternatives. I said, you know, alternatives need to support each other. And so just because your area is UFOs and mine is more the psychic intuition ghost hunting stuff, it's like, the alternatives are the ones that are going to more readily embrace the other groups. And so to sit there and go, oh, well, you know, you're wearing a tinfoil hat or you're a psychic or you're into ghost hunting and you're not serious about UFOs, but if you don't open the door to let people step in it that are those people that could potentially become interested seriously in UFOs, it's not that they're making fun of it. They're
having fun.
Yeah, they're just
having fun. As I've said many times, we do not only UFO shows and paranormal, but a lot of things. And it all works hand in hand. A lot of people that come for other things all of a sudden get attached to this stuff and start listening to it.
That's right. I mean, somebody that might be listening to a show initially listens to it because you're talking about ancient mysteries or you're talking about
whatever.
Healing. And you have somebody come on the show that they happen to catch that just it just captivates their interest and it takes them into a new direction. I mean, that happens to people all the time.
Now, you've expanded your radio menu as far as a guest genre. I guess you have a lot of UFO people on there.
Well, I mean, I try to keep it pretty eclectic in what do we talk about. And so, you know, it goes anywhere from alternative health through UFOs, relationships, ancient mysteries. That's my new thing, Jerry. I really have been into the ancient mysteries.
Well, topic. I find them very intriguing. That whole concept.
It's a mystery. Maybe that's why I like it.
Yeah. And you've had several people on recently on your shows dealing with ancient mysteries.
That's right. And actually, next month I have Graham Hancock and Brad.
Having a senior moment.
Yeah, I am. I must still be tired.
But she's,
Brad Steiger.
And she's not that old, folks.
But I have Graham Hancock and Brad Steiger both coming on the same day, which would be October 15th.
Okay.
JustEnergyRadio.com.
Yeah, okay. Hey, you're picking up on how to get those plugs out.
I think about you, Jerry. It's like weed.
Now you're all of us, for a little while, you weren't going as many places, or it didn't seem like you were, but it seems like, I looked at your schedule, it seems like you got a lot of things planned here. You're going places like this now again.
Well, I wasn't really interested in doing a lot of traveling, and I was doing a lot of writing at the time, and I've kind of shifted gears to getting out. When everybody you know tells you you need to take it on the road, you know, eventually you have to listen to their advice. And so I've heeded what they've said, and I've been very welcome at a lot of places, and I'm going to be doing speaking, especially with Halloween coming up. There's a lot of ghost conferences coming up, and so I'm going to be talking about my new book, Dark Angels, and about ghost spirits and attached entities.
I'm glad you brought that book up. Let's talk about Dark Angels. And it gives me all kinds of images. What are we talking about there in that book?
Well, in that book, we talk about three major topics. We talk about ghosts and the different ways that ghosts can interact with us in our lives, the different kinds of hauntings that you can have. And I tell a lot of stories. I've had a lot of experience working with paranormal groups and my own personal experiences interacting with ghosts. And so I tell a lot of stories, and they're pretty fun. You know, they're not spooky. Actually, I was interviewed on a show last week, and they were concerned that my topic would be too dark. You know, like creepy dark. And they finally read the book and they loved it because it's presented in a way that isn't scary. You know, it's informative and fun, but you still get the message like, okay, maybe they're not so nice.
And you, when you communicate with these ghosts, you don't ever seem to show any fear. I've talked to you about several sessions you've done. Have you ever been...
Spooked?
Jesus, I can't get out of here.
Well, it's interesting because I'm really a ghost chicken. And okay. So I don't...
Dr. Rita Louise, ghost chicken.
Well, and so I don't like going into places that are dark and spooky looking by myself. And if you could turn the lights on, that's A-okay. And people are like, well, isn't it better in the dark? And I go... I can see the ghosts just as well with the lights on versus the lights off. So, you know, if we can put the lights on and then when I leave you can turn them back off, that's good.
Well, I think a lot of that influence comes from pop culture movies, horror movies over the years.
Well, I mean, I grew up in a haunted house and that really didn't help.
Yeah, we talked
anything.
About that at one time.
Yeah.
That's how you probably got interested in all this. And that was up in New York someplace, Buffalo or someplace?
Kingston.
Yeah, okay, yeah, close.
Yeah. Well, not really, but...
Okay, not close. In the same
state.
It's in
the state, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, not really, because I was a ghost chicken, and then I lived in a place that had been a funeral parlor. I just... When I went to school at Berkeley Psychic Institute, they had these house healing teams, but basically it was the healing end of ghost hunting, because you'd go into a house, and you would scan it for... whatever happened to be in there, and then you would do a clearing. And so that kind of opened the door to have it not be as scary, because we went in and we had the lights on everywhere, and and there were groups. I mean, one of the things that I've discovered in doing that is that when you're interacting with ghosts, ghosts are people too. You know, and they might be old and cranky and have an alcohol issue, which makes them even crankier, but they're people.
You mean they can't get a drink when they're...
Yeah.
Just, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you know, they just want one more cigarette.
Yeah, just...
You know? Just one more drag.
Yeah. you know, when we talk about your communication with these ghosts, and you mentioned you lived in a funeral parlor, I one time asked you about cemeteries, you said you didn't like to go there too much.
I mean, when I go into a location, especially a cemetery, there is so much going on that I just get overloaded. You know, it's kind of like the screen goes white and I don't pick up anything.
So, but they just stay in the cemetery? They don't go anyplace? So usually I always had the impression that they would go back to where they enjoyed being or whatever.
I don't know. I mean,
Well, you talk to these people.
When I go to a cemetery, I mean, when you go to a cemetery, there's multiple things going on. There are the living people that are going there and mourning.
And mourning, okay.
And leaving their emotional energy.
I get your point.
There's the dead people, you know, yeah. There's the whatever. And so to be able to segregate out who's the ghost, who's the sad person, who's this, who's that.
Are we all destined to be a ghost?
No. Thank God. Actually, I had two different interviews, one with Suzanne Northrup and then one with John Holland, and they're both very well-known mediums. And Suzanne Northrup said that as a medium, she does not communicate with ghosts, which I thought was really bizarre. She goes, no, people that communicate with ghosts are more spirit rescuers, or she had a different title, that mediums communicate with people that have passed over. And I thought it was a little flaky, to be honest with you. And she's on my show tonight. Hi, Suzanne. I love you, though.
Yeah.
And so I had John Holland on, and I asked him the same question. You know, do you communicate with ghosts? And he said, no, I only communicate with people that have crossed over, which I thought was very fascinating.
So it's two different places, then.
Right.
Do you go? Are there many places for the dead?
Well, I mean,
what's your hunch?
I mean, this is my hunch. I think that when we die, that the majority of people cross over into the light and, you know, go through the tunnel, whatever. You know, they do whatever you do when you're dead.
And you go wherever you go.
And then they have the option of coming to, as I like to say, they come and visit. You know, so mom might come and visit, or Aunt Sally, or the dog. You know, they can come and visit, and they can come and go as they like. But then there are some that actually never go through that transition, and they hang on to their life here on Earth because they want that other drink or whatever. And those are the ones that are the classic, if you're going to have a bad haunting, ghosts.
Now, real mean SOB dies, and he wants to hang around. Is he dangerous?
He can be. I mean, when you see these shows, it's, you know, whenever there's a ghost, you're going to get scratched up. But the cases of people being hurt or victimized by ghosts really is so tiny that if you think you have a ghost in your house, I wouldn't worry about something bad happening. Because sometimes they can be kind of a friendly ghost.
Right. Poltergeist originally was, I guess, kidding around ghosts, but it's other things now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they've just redefined what it is.
Now, as far as, I've never heard of a ghost killing somebody, but maybe they scare the hell out of them. They jump out a window or something.
Right. I mean, but
and
I've...
they're on the 20th floor.
I mean, but I've heard of people being scratched.
Really?
A friend of mine sent me these pictures, and actually it was a woman that worked for me, Sandra, who I'd known for a very long time, and I trust things that she would say. And I know her daughter, and her daughter had some kind of encounter happen where her boyfriend was scratched, and she was wearing a little necklace thing, like a little locket kind of necklace. And it got really hot and literally burnt her skin. The locket burnt her skin. And they sent me pictures. And if it came from anybody else, I would maybe go, But it came from somebody that I do trust that they wouldn't just send me crap.
So there's a lot of things even you don't know about ghosts.
That's right.
Now, at these meetings, conventions, symposiums, whatever we want to call these things, what kind of things are you going to find at Dr. Rita Louise's exhibit?
Well, one of the things that I'm doing is I'm doing private consultation work with people that are here at the exhibit. So if they want to get a reading, a medical intuition evaluation, or just want somebody friendly and fun to talk to, they can come and get a session. I also am selling my books, Dark Angels, which we talked about, Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, which we've talked about on an earlier interview, and my book, The Power Within.
And The Power Within sounds like...
It is a book to help somebody develop their psychic abilities using healing as the modality.
I've always heard we all have them, do we?
We do. We all have psychic abilities. It's just that most people aren't aware
it's
of when they're...
It's not just me... figuring by experience something's going to happen? I mean, you think there's more to it than that?
I think everybody has psychic moments, and we just don't make the connection between if I have this thought and then this happens, that when I had the thought, I was having a psychic moment. You know, and so people will just invent, well, they'll just go, oh, well, that was weird. Well, that was weird. But if you stop and say, well, wait a minute, I was having a psychic moment, then it doesn't take too long before you can be psychic.
Okay. what's the future hold for you? What you're going to continue your broadcast? You've been doing that a long time.
3.5 years, Jerry. 3.5 years. And all the archives are available on www.justenergyradio.com. See, Jerry, I'm so learning from you.
Yeah, you caught on good, kid. So you
I mean, I'm keeping doing that. I've started a new book, which I really don't want to talk about yet.
I know. I was trying to get a little hint about that, but I understand.
Yeah. I'm not 100% sure what it's about yet.
Aha.
The
next book, folks, that Dr. Rita Louise has, remember, she didn't know what she was writing about. Are we talking about heavenly writing or spiritual writing here? You just sit down and things come to you?
Well, thank God, no.
Yeah.
Well, the book started out, my original concept, I will tell you this, the original concept of the book was to talk about the science of the paranormal and to tie what they understand in science, quantum physics, you know, whatever theories into psychic abilities, ghosts, you know, parallel universes, whatever. Mm-hmm. That was the original thought of the book, and it has gone somewhere completely different, and I'm just not sure where it's going to end up.
Well, you know, actually, a lot of people start writing, and it turns out one thing leads to another. I do that even with radio shows sometimes. You know, I get somebody that I think I'm going to talk about this, and then I find out they do something else, and we talk about that. So I guess you're not following me, are you?
No, I am following you. I just am like, okay, how do I respond to that?
Well, you don't, but you can respond about this. You're living for the next 3 days in an old hotel, but it's nice.
It's actually very nice.
And it's a high point in New Mexico, 10,000 feet, and it's supposed to be haunted.
Really?
Have you been upstairs yet? Have they got a, well, they used to have a bordello. It's supposed to be really haunted up there.
Don't tell me anything. Well, no, I don't want to hear any more details.
Oh, okay.
Because that just contaminates it.
Well, okay. I'll take your word for it. So you didn't notice anything yet, but you were so tired.
Well, I mean, for me, when I work, it's like I have to, you know, and I like to say, and no, you cannot buy these in Walmart. I like to put my psychic glasses on. I mean, because I am a regular person, and I choose not to be bombarded with energy.
So you can shut this stuff out.
I can totally shut it off.
Do you see auras or anything?
I can, but I choose to turn it off. Now, Jerry, think about this. If I'm seeing my aura in the mirror and I'm trying to get dressed, how would I know if I'm clashing with myself?
So you can shut it on and off.
Yeah, I can shut it all off. Thank God.
So you probably can detect when a guy's lying to you or something?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. You know, it used to make me laugh when my kids would try to lie to me. And it's like, hello, lying to a psychic? Doesn't make any sense.
I was up there last night. You were tired, but you were still visiting everybody. You're out on that little patio and visiting with everyone.
I was just happy.
You have a lot of energy.
Well, I try.
I guess that's why you call it just energy.
That's
you sell
right.
Something that gives you that? Is it in a bottle or something?
I wish. Well, you know, I run hard, I play hard,
okay.
I crash hard.
Now, I want to, we cannot get away from this show without talking about soul healing and all of that. Because the first time I talked to you, you were on every television station down in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, were doing some, I think, alternative medicine. They were
I was doing energy medicine and medical intuition work.
Mm-hmm. And you still do that.
I mean, that is, you know, my main, you know how people have their day job? That's my day job. I write and do this other stuff as part of my day job, too.
I mean, there's all kinds of terms to this. And you're going to have to straighten me out on a lot of that. And somebody was talking to me about psychic surgery.
I do that, too.
I figured you probably did. That's the reason I brought it up. How does that work?
Okay. So under the idea, and I'm going to say of energy medicine.
You don't cut on anybody, do you?
No.
Okay, good.
Okay. So under the idea of energy medicine, when you are doing things energetically, it's all about intention. And so I don't know how familiar your listeners are with something like Reiki, you know, but the person just puts their hands on different areas of their body and sends energy in, you know, and that's pretty much the principle of it. And so when I'm doing work, I don't like using the psychic surgery work because sometimes you can get in a little trouble because you're saying surgery, you know, so I shy away from that term.
Well, the medical profession does look out.
Well, yeah, so I shy away from that word, but since it's, you know, me and you, talking, you know, I'll talk about it in that way. But when I'm doing psychic surgery on somebody, I use my intention and my visualization to go in. And so as an example, I'm going to use Wayne. So my husband would get migraines. And, oh, this is funny, Jerry. You'll love this story. And so first, because he's like mainstream medical. And so we're together. He's getting these migraines. I'm going, well, do you want me to work on you? And he goes, I took some aspirin. I'm like, So after a while of me asking, well, do you want me to work on you? He's like, okay, fine. And so in my mind's eye, and I adjusted his back, I adjusted his neck,
And you never touched him.
I never touched him. I went in, there was some inflammation inside his skull that I calmed down. I adjusted his cranial bones. I went in and cleaned out his liver. I cleaned out the bile ducts that connect the liver to the gallbladder and that whole system there. You know, and I just like did this stuff, manipulated things in his body. Wow. So after about 10 or 15 minutes of doing this, I stopped and looked at him and I said, so how do you feel? And he kind of moved his neck around and he goes, well, I still hurt. He goes, but the headache's gone. And he had this look of confusion on his face because he couldn't figure out how me waving my hands around and yawning could possibly make his head not hurt. And then he goes, placebo effect. But after a number of times working on him where the headache would be gone, or sometimes he'll get reflux at night, especially if he has like chili and it's 8 o'clock and he's going to bed soon kind of thing. And I'll just calm down that stomach muscle and he'll
sleep. So you're better
fine.
Than Pepto-Bismol.
Sometimes.
Now, I want to talk to you about people listening and what can Dr. Rita Louise do for them? In other words, who should be contacting you? Can you do this by long distance? Can they call you on the phone or by the computer? Or you have to see everybody or what?
No, I mean, the majority of my clients do not live in the Dallas area. They live around the country, around the world. Most of the clients that I work with, obviously in the United States, I talk to over the phone. I have some clients that are international that we communicate via Skype. And so sometimes we'll actually get like the Skype-to-Skype picture, but a lot of times it's just voice via Skype. I've done sessions with people by
Does
email.
Does it help you if you have the video?
No, not really, but it makes them feel
makes
better.
Makes them feel a lot better, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you do television shows and you interview somebody, a lot of times they're astounded that if it's a remote, they don't see the host, but they hear him on their headset, you know, and they just never really get used to that. But it's expectation, I guess. Mm-hmm. So basically, anybody, anywhere can contact you through your website.
Correct. Soulhealer.com.
Yeah. You're letting me down here. And you can help them.
Very much
if
so.
If they have what kind of problems?
I mean, it goes from you're having a relationship issue, a health issue, issues at work, issues in your own life. I'm a one-stop shop. Even if you think you have issues with ghosts or attached entities in your life, or you have, you know, I even have people that call because they have an aging parent that they're concerned about. They have a young child that they're concerned about. And so I don't even necessarily, I mean, sometimes there's boundary issues, have issues talking about a third party. If the person, you know, especially if it's an aging parent, a young child, where the caregiver needs information as to how to deal with a situation.
So you're saying there's certain ways that people can be, like an aging person who's a Alzheimer's is probably out. That's probably too far. Or can you help somebody there?
But sometimes, like I had one client whose father who had father had Alzheimer's, but he was still living in the home.
Okay.
And so there were a lot of questions about should they move him into a retirement facility that dealt with Alzheimer's stuff? How's her mom going to deal with it? You know, and those kind of issues, life issues, that people need some guidance as to what's the best
step. So someone that has these problems, what I'm getting at, talking to a stranger, talking to Dr. Rita Louise, actually might be a good way to do it, to work these things out.
Yes, very much so. I mean, because they're looked
and
at.
And you're
from,
open to that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's part of your job.
That's
part
what
of
I
your
do.
Day job.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay. You got anything you want to plug or you got anything you want to talk about?
No, I'm pretty good
you
right now.
You seem very content these days.
Well, you know, I got married. Again, in February.
I didn't know quite what to say about that because, you know, I've been married a couple of times, but you don't mind mentioning it. How's it working out?
It is great.
Okay.
It is great. You know, my husband, Wayne, I love him.
Is this the musician?
It's the musician. That's correct.
Okay. I just have to keep up with your wife here.
And, you know, we joke around because we'll go and sit in the garage and talk, and we have garage time because you go in and you talk for 10 minutes. Jerry, and I'm telling you, it is only 10 minutes. And you go out of the garage, and an hour and a half has gone by. We have garage time. I don't understand. It's a time warp in our house.
And you don't, do you remember what you talked for an hour and a half, or you think you talked for 10 minutes?
Well, we only talk for 10 minutes, I'm telling you.
Okay. Yeah, I think I'm reading it. But anyway, I think we'll leave it alone. So you're happy.
I'm very happy.
And I'm happy when Dr. Rita's happy. And you look good.
Thanks.
And you sound good, and your shows are on just about every time I turn someplace. I was doing an interview, a guest shot, and listened to it on the computer ahead of time to see what kind of show, and there you were. And I thought, well, I have the wrong internet network here. But I didn't. You're just everywhere, and you're adding more people.
Well, actually, I might be doing a show on Fate Radio as well.
Yeah, Phyllis Galdi's doing that, huh?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know all the details yet. You know, but a very good friend of mine, Brian, and his wife, Anna Maria, have a show called Ghostology. And they're sweethearts. Not as sweet as you, but they're sweethearts. And I was talking with him and was asking about the network because it seemed like they were adding more people onto the network. And I was like, well, you know, might be yet another place for me.
Right.
And he was like, oh, you'd be interested in coming on. And so that was yesterday. So that's why I don't have the details yet.
So this is the details coming soon.
That's right.
And we'll keep everybody posted. Rita, it's always a pleasure having you on.
Well, Jerry, you know I always love spending time with you. You know, I have to tell you something. Wayne listens to my show every week. And so when I had you on and we were talking about whatever we were talking about, he loved the show and he told me that I needed to have you back on. You know, because he was like, you guys, you just like bounce off each other and
right.
just have such a good time.
It's we got that magic.
That's right.
And we did some fun shows in Roswell one year.
That's right.
And a very noisy restaurant, but it was great.
It was really good.
Yeah. I've enjoyed it, Rita. Dr. Rita Louise. We're dealing with some of the people here at the Paranormal Symposium, and we are at Angel Fire Resort. And we have another interesting guest coming right up. If you are a UFO show buff, can't get enough UFO programming, we suggest you go to our UFOshowstogo.com website regularly. Bookmark us. We put all of our UFO programming there as a link. It's easy to find. Simply go to UFOshowstogo.com. It's available as a podcast, MP3, or Windows Media downloads. Either way, listen or download. we do our best to give you the latest in UFO news. We're here at the Paranormal Symposium, the second annual one, as a matter of fact. Lots of free things going on, lots of very interesting things going on, and we happen to have a person here who has a free thing going on that's also very interesting, and I think you'll enjoy listening to this lady, and we'll enjoy talking to her because she has an interesting little thing to talk about. It's called a labyrinth. And you may or may not know what we're talking about when we talk about that. Sandra Wesco Flood. And Sandra instead of Sandra, right?
Sandra, yes.
Yeah, okay. I want to make sure I get it right. I have a mental block there already on the name because we talked about it earlier. But it's Wasco.
Mm-hmm.
W-O-S-K-O.
W-A-S-K-O.
Okay, mm-hmm. Now, and Flood is your last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear great things about you. You did some things around Washington, D.C., I think.
Yes, I've been living in the Washington, D.C. area for many years, and I came into the labyrinth movement, which there is a renaissance today of labyrinths. The ancient design that's over 4,000 years old that's found in many cultures of the world, and unlike a maze where you can get lost because there's many paths and false starts and dead ends, a labyrinth have only one path to the center and back. And many people find that it slows the breathing and focuses the mind and induces a really peaceful state of being. And they're rediscovered today to help us physically and psychologically and spiritually.
I want to face maybe how you got interested in these to begin with. And also, I guess it goes back in time at least 4,000 or 5,000 years, maybe further.
That's correct. Well, I got interested in them because I love to backpack and hike, and I made several trips to Chaco Canyon, New Mexico. And I'm a visionary artist, and all my symbols and vision have come through visions. And I was sitting in the Great Kiva in Chaco Canyon, New Mexico, and I saw figures coming out of the ground and dancing in and out of the walls. And the next day, I went to a bookstore, and I went straight to this book, Labyrinths, Ancient Myths and Modern Uses by Sig Lofgren, just had been published, and I read it from cover to cover, and I knew a labyrinth belonged inside that kiva. And I went back to Washington, D.C. area where I was living, and I made the art technology labyrinths for this time period. And it's computer-programmed light boxes that when you step on them, they light up. And it has a mirror ball and a mirror, and it's called Dance of the Labyrinth. It's various light sequences, phosphorescent paint with black lights. We begin with the moonlight sequence, and then we go through all the paths of earth, air, fire, and water, and so on. And so I asked that labyrinth where it wanted to be one day. And it had become my spiritual practice, and I walk it for intentions, you know, to decide things, to resolve conflicts, to make wishes for peace, for myself and family and friends and community and the world. And one day I asked it where it wanted to be, and it told me four times very loud in the Capitol. And I knew the curator of the Capitol Collection, and I asked her if you could have a show there. She said, yes, you could have an art show if you go through the your congressman in the Senate or in the House. And so I went over to the House of Representatives, and I looked at the Cannon Rotunda, and I saw 12 concentric circles on the floor and a dome overhead. And that could easily be made into a Chartres Cathedral labyrinth with mm-hmm. the 12 circuits. And I saw all the reps walking, you know, for peace and to make decisions. And I was overwhelmed. I saw this fire, you know, this vision of this fire coming up the center, and I thought, oh, I'm just going to, I don't want to do this, you know. I'm not political. I don't want to get into this. And I sort of sat on it for a month, and I said, well, somebody else in this Labyrinth Society can help do it, you know. And I had been a founding member of the Labyrinth Society. The thing that came in between was mm-hmm. that after I read the book, I found looked at the bibliography, found these people meeting in St. Louis, and we found at the International Labyrinth Society in 1998, and this was our first project. Well, after a month, I realized I was being called, and so it took 2 years to pull it off. But in the year 2000, we had a labyrinth-walking demonstration for inner peace on the east lawn of the U.S. Capitol. That's not the mall. It's a very restricted area right behind the Capitol in front of the Library of Congress in view of the Supreme Court. And it was a peaceful demonstration. We had two large surveyor flag labyrinths out there and several canvas ones. And Clinton gave his St. Patrick's Day speech, and everybody was happy, you know. And so lots of tourists walked it. And from that whole experience, I got the idea of forming the organization Living Labyrinths for Peace. And the idea was inner peace to world peace. And so if you can resolve your conflicts, your problems, then you can help the world.
That's very logical.
Right. Right. And right now, we did have an exhibit, a traveling exhibit of labyrinths from around the world in the Cannon Rotunda of the House of Representatives. And that is now on exhibit at the Millicent Rogers Museum here in Taos. And we do have here at the Paranormal Conference the video tape of that event in the year 2000.
And now, when we talk about this conference and what you're doing, you have two different setups, is that right?
Yes, we have two labyrinths here. We have one indoors. It's a canvas labyrinth, and it's the oldest one that exists. It's the classic Seven Circuit Labyrinth. And people don't know where it came from, but one theory is that it is the path of Mercury. And so we have a path of universal peace labyrinth, it's called, and it is the path of Mercury, and it has some night glow paint on it, so you can walk it in the dark or light.
And you have something in the downtown? Or?
No, I have something for the conference. Uh-huh. It's a Man in the Maze labyrinth, Pima Indians, and it's built right on the place where the Angel Fire is intending to do the Plaza del Sol. And that's right behind the fire station and near the, I think it's the First American Bank. And we're going to have, it's a huge 48-foot diameter labyrinth made out of spray paint and feathers. And I say it's the Indian labyrinth. And we're going to have a music celebration and walking for peace celebration tomorrow at 12:30.
Saturday?
Yes, yeah, Saturday.
Uh-huh. Will you be doing anything on Sunday?
Sunday we'll probably have, today we had a celebration of the one inside here that I just told you about.
Right.
And on Sunday probably we'll do that again on the lunch hour. I think it'd be nice.
It would be good.
And tomorrow's 9/11, and I really think it's significant that we do walk that for peace.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's one of the reasons you were interested in doing it here, if I understand correctly, because of the date, 9/11.
Right, that was correct. Mm-hmm. And also, it's an Indian labyrinth, and I think the first people we make, you know, peace with are the Indians, because they were here first in
right.
this valley, you know.
Do you have a website or something where people could check you out and see what you're talking about?
Yes, I do. I have a website, Living Labyrinths for Peace. It's www.livinglabyrinthsforpeace.org.
And we have a link to that on our webpage with this interview, so people can find it.
Yes.
And how about the organization itself that you founded? The International Labyrinth Association or something?
That one. That organization, the Labyrinth Society, and their website is www.labyrinthsociety.org.
So when you walk into one of the, what do? You come up to a labyrinth and you walk in the entrance. Are you on your own as you go through it, or is there a guide, or how does it work?
Well, you generally pause at the entrance, and that's the opening. There's only one opening, and you walk between the lines, and it's suggested that there's many ways to walk the labyrinth as there are people, and you decide what you want to walk for. If you want to walk for a special intention.
You kind of dedicate your walk ahead
of to something. And you bring all your own beliefs and everything to it. So this is why it relates to all cultures and religions and races. You know, you bring, if you want to walk it to become closer to whatever higher power you believe in, I always think of the
you know, the Native Americans about this, but really it goes back at least to Greece, and I guess some other places.
Right, and we found them. We know there were sacred marriages in them, and we know that they're around tombs, and they had something to do with the journey and orientation, you know, and also protection. In Northern Europe, there was a lot of stone labyrinths that are still extant, and they walked them to ensure good fishing catches and to entrap evil spirits. And they think Troy and Jerusalem were labyrinths, you know. So we have the idea of protection and transformation. Also, the Minotaur came into the picture, and we have the idea of dying to some old way of being, or kill, you know, conquering the shadow or the evil, you know, part of yourself or in life, you know. So there's also that idea at the center. It's sort of a death transformation rebirth idea.
Now, the one in Taos, how long will that be there?
The exhibit's going to be up until October 1st. And also, I've been organizing Labyrinth Sacred Spaces events for the town of Taos for this summer. And next summer, we're going to have some other events happening. We're going to have tours of a lot of the labyrinths. We're going to have labyrinth workshops. And also, the Labyrinth Society Conference, you know, is going to be there. I'm organizing that in 2011, in November.
In November, this November, but
next November. November, right. And it will be at the Convention Center. And we have a theme, Return to the Center, the Heart of Peace. And we're going to explore the unifying effects of ancient labyrinths, you know, the peaceful effects that are bringing people together.
And you'll be putting up some information about that as you get it together.
I certainly will, yes.
Okay. Now, is there something else we need to talk about here? Or we covered the subject pretty much.
Well, I guess the dream of our organization is to build a Living Labyrinths for Peace Center here in New Mexico, based on the Chaco Canyon experience. And I'm supposed to build it in the Taos area on the high desert. And it is, I have a picture of it, and we have the three rooms. We have a glass dome over at Kiva, and we have Under Earth, which is a spiral. You enter underneath, and you come up to the next level, which is the Kiva floor, and there's going to be labyrinths there. They're going to be art technology labyrinths. People will be able to choose the designs that they want and project them. We have the technology that people can bring their own images from their own family, their own journeys, and they can choose their own music, and we'll have workshops. And the third level, of course, will be above Earth, and it'll be like an astronomical dome open to the stars. And we'll have a glass elevator going up the center. And rooms are going to go around the outside for, you know, the museum and the gallery and the video room and peace rooms for the family and the ancestors and so on.
So is this project just underway? Or?
It's just starting. Mm-hmm. It's just starting.
Then how long do you think that'll take?
I don't know. I'm receiving that I'm supposed to really devote all my energy to this, and I'm putting it out to the universe and to Great Spirit and everything. The funding and everything will come through for this.
Have you got a specific location in mind?
No, not yet. I was thinking one possible place is the university area, so we have a view of Taos Mountain on the desert, or maybe Arroyo Seco, but it's not definite yet. Or maybe where the earth ships are out there by the gorge, somewhere around there.
Well, keep us informed, and thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Okay, I've enjoyed it. And this is Jerry Pippin, and we've had an interesting two-hour session here, an hour and a half or so, with several guests here at the 2010 Paranormal Symposium. And it'll be running through Sunday. It stops about 3 o'clock. We're at the Angel Fire Resort, and that, of course, is in Angel Fire, New Mexico. And it's a great place to come and visit at any time. And as you can tell, we have quite a crowd here already, and we'll be broadcasting all weekend, and these shows will be on demand for some time. So tell your friends about it and then come back and listen. We've been examining spirituality and how it affects health, and as you just heard from our last guest, world peace. It's been a very interesting show. Jane Swartley is our web producer. Roberta Scott is our on-location producer. Shanina Johnson is also a producer here helping us. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Thanks for listening. Cheers.